Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today, we are going to attack the idea of what is value. And before we dive into it, I want to harken back to a couple of things that Mark has said in previous podcasts. And one of them really has to do with the fact that there's going to be a substantial amount of pent-up demand that is going to have to be met after this pandemic kind of subsides, in whatever that looks like, whatever degree that that looks like. And as I was warming up with Mark today to get ready to record, he had said those previous discussions lead beautifully into this discussion of value. Now, value in this podcast has two different sorts of meanings that we're going to work with. So which one of those do you want to attack first there, my friend?
Well, I think we should attack the whole idea of what we've talked about in the past in modern portfolio theory and the idea of growth stocks versus value stocks, right? And of course, I always use the phrase that if I invest in a business, not a stock, I invest in a business, I'm looking at investing in that business because it has value. And there's different levels of value, different layers of value in any business you own, but also as it pertains to the asset allocation strategy that you're going to use within your portfolio, right? So there has been a massive shift. We talked about this a little last fall, and we did a lot of portfolio adjusting for our own clients over the last 6 months, shifting, particularly in the fourth quarter of 2020, shifting ourselves out of what you would consider to be expensive companies, high price to earnings ratio companies, or companies don't have earnings, i.e. growth stocks, and moving to the value stocks. So let me define the difference between them first. Growth stocks, Matt, are typically companies that investors are willing to pay up on valuation. They typically have very high price to earnings ratios or no earnings at all, but people are paying for the future growth of that company.
Can you give me an example? I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that I can wrap my brain around.
Sure. Well, one of the greatest examples of one of the biggest growth stocks of our, probably our lifetime is Amazon. Amazon's a company that came out in the 90s, has always had a price to earnings ratio of either nothing. They weren't making money for a long time until they started making money and making a lot of money. This is why I always say that I'm not a big fan of growth stocks versus value stocks, because value is relative and people are willing to pay for things based on certain criteria. You know, the greatest example I can give you right now is the housing market. I mean, you talk to a real estate agent, they'll tell you the housing market's nuts and they're seeing things happen they've never seen before, because you're having a macro shift. You're having people move out of the cities. You have your millennials, and I forget what the group is below millennials, but a lot of them are moving out of the city now and they're moving into the suburbs. There's a massive shift. These are called secular shifts. Cyclical meaning short-term, secular meaning long-term. And growth stocks have been in a secular move forward really for a long time, probably at least since the bottom of the financial crisis. So there's a lot of names that you would call quote-unquote growth stocks. Square is a really popular example today of a growth stock. You can go down the road, high price to earnings ratio, high price to sales, companies growing tremendously.
Beautiful.
But I always like to bring up Amazon because valuation is always relative. And while a growth stock may be cyclical in its up and down valuation, there are some companies, category killers, like an Amazon, that continue to grow with a high valuation no matter what. This is why we like, Matt, investing in businesses versus mutual funds and exchange traded funds. The ability to pick and choose the businesses you want to invest in and then continually strategically cost average into those names. Okay. Growth stocks typically do well in low interest rate environments because people are looking for growth. They're looking for companies that are going to exceed their expectations, and therefore money flows into those names. Well, now as you're seeing interest rates start to move higher, and we believe that that process, while it'll go up and down, we believe that that process will continue, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years, valuations of growth stocks have gotten extended. This is why you're seeing a dichotomy between performance in the NASDAQ lately versus the Dow or the S&P. You're seeing a sell-off in big growth names, and you're seeing money flow into like financials, the number one performing sector of the first quarter of 2021.
Why do you think that? Why are financials so strong right now? You have a philosophy on that?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, we think you're having a secular shift out of growth names and the value names. Value names, I didn't give the definition. Those are companies that typically have low price to earnings ratio, low price to sales ratios. A lot of times they'll have a dividend associated with it. Dividends are important in a low interest rate environment. And so financials have been trading at extreme discounts. I've talked about Citigroup and AIG for an example, which is this is public information. These are two of our largest holdings. They trade below their book value. And they both have dividends. They both have strong management. You know, I can go on and on about that. But the point is, value names a lot of times will trade at much lower multiples to the market. I mean, I looked at CVS, whose earnings just came out yesterday. Stock was up 5% in a down market. And CVS's price earnings ratio is like 10. Well, to give you the comparison, the S&P 500's, I don't know, sitting at 18 times earnings. There are cyclical shifts that happen in investing, and then there are secular shifts. We really believe we are in a secular shift after many years of value stocks outperforming growth stocks, partially because of the interest rate environment and where the economy is going. And what's funny is value stocks historically over a long period of time have actually outperformed growth stocks. We just had an anomaly the last 10 years. Yeah. So when you think about value stocks, you know, they to us look very, very good. So my head of research, Chuck, put a little deal together for me, and I'll read it for you because it may help the listeners. Value stocks, after a decade of dramatically underperforming growth stocks, look finally to be poised to outperform. On a historic basis, when the economy is buoyant, based on increase in employment, modest inflation, fiscal stimulus, and accommodative monetary policy, value tends to outperform growth. Unfortunately for value investors, the characteristics of the economy have been at points in time individually present, but as a complete group have not, based on recent pricing actions. Value stocks have looked to have turned that corner. So back to my point, value stocks have outperformed over time. We've had historically low interest rates. We've had a really weird, different economy where investors have been looking for growth. And we really think that you want to own value stocks. Now, every portfolio, frankly, should own quote unquote growth stocks and value stocks. This is why the modern portfolio theory thing to me has many things I don't like about it. But one thing I do believe in as it pertains to it is you want to own some high growth names and you want to own value names. There are two, this is a very important point. Investors often become very myopic in looking at an investment's performance, Matt. A lot of times when people get older, they focus very much on the income, the yield they get on their portfolio, because in their mind, that's where they make money. Yeah, because I get income, I get real money coming in. But the reality is, if you're using active portfolio management, you are taking profits in stocks as they grow. And what most investors don't realize, as interest rates were going down, and we've talked about this before, their money managers have been taking profits in the bonds because they've made far more money in capital appreciation than they have in the interest. That means when you have your portfolio allocated, you make money two ways. You make it on the income, dividend and interest, and you make it on the capital appreciation. You make it on taking profit off of some of the investments that you own.
Now, has there been a time, and you're categorizing growth and value, and I know that's a huge component of a lot of investment philosophies, but has there ever been a time where, I mean, should we really focus that closely on those two words? Because I mean, some of the value stocks that you're talking about are actually outperforming some of the growth stocks anyway. So is that potato potato here?
Yeah, you're talking short term. This is why, okay, so you're a great setup, man. Thank you. So that's why you want to invest in businesses over time. It's time in an investment, not time in an investment. And you beg for volatility, because volatility is what creates the opportunity to take advantage of buying a great business on sale. Look, before COVID, Citigroup was an $81, $82 stock. It went all the way to 40. Now, did the long-term fundamentals of Citigroup change? Short-term, sure, the economy took a hit. That affects banks short-term. But the economy is not always going to be like that. And so when Citigroup's at 50 or 40, that gets pretty appealing. What's interesting is now we are, call it 13 months out of the start of the pandemic, March until May now, and Citigroup's back to 73. So if you had bought it at 81 and bought more of it at 40, you've significantly reduced your basis in that business, plus you've been continuing to get your yield. This is the power of strategic cost averaging. This is the power of knowing what you own, why you own it, and this is the power of asset allocation. Growth stocks and value stocks go in and out of favor all the time, short term. There are secular trends that happen, and even though value stocks have underperformed growth stocks, they still have done pretty well, certainly better than keeping your money in a bank account. So it is all about that asset allocation.
Now, value has two meanings, according to this podcast. And are we ready to switch to the second meaning of value? You got some more...
We can, I mean, there's always more, right? Yeah. But we can certainly move to the second aspect of value.
Well, it's this is interesting to me, because you've turned this into an acronym, and it's an acronym. And when you put all of these other words together, honestly, Mark, I don't know if I've heard somebody put these sequence of words together. So it's not just creative, because you are freaking creative, but I mean, this is like really different perspective here.
Well, we're entering a different phase of the economy, and we're entering a different phase of the marketplace. And when it comes to managing your businesses, that if you're a business owner, or managing your portfolio of businesses you own, you have to have the third piece of our four keys to successful investing, which is flexibility. You need to be able to be flexible and making decisions and making movements within your portfolio to help you manage your ability to potentially increase your returns, and at the same time, minimize your risks, right? So yeah, so actually our theme, as put together by the investment committee here at Nepsis, our theme for 2021 is value. Now, it's a double-edged sword saying that, because fourth quarter last year, I really started seeing this shift. There were cracks, if you will, in what was happening in the movement of growth stocks versus value stocks. And so we started buying a lot of AIG, a lot of Citigroup. You can see our 13F filings, and you can see what we buy and sell. But at the end of the day, that shift continues today. As in the, like I said, the first quarter, banks were, you know, financials did really well. Part of that was the spike in interest rates. Most people don't realize that bonds can be just as risky as stocks. They just don't realize it. And we've talked about that in the past. But our theme for 2021 is value. And the acronym is vaccine for V, A for alternatives, L for lenders, U for U.S. dollar, and E for earnings. So you want me to cover that, don't you?
I do. Yes. You got to break all those down, brother. Let's do it.
Not a problem. Well, I already discussed value stocks. After, you know, the decade of underperforming growth stocks, they look like they're ready for various reasons. Let's talk about the vaccine. The first letter in our acronym is the most important by far. If the vaccine can be distributed properly and executed and administered in an effective manner, investors will look past lofty valuations and focus on the clear run to the economy reopening and getting back a some sense of normalcy. We use the CDC website for our data source on the vaccine. You're already starting to see people get more comfortable. You're already starting to see people flying more. You're already starting to see things open up. Even here in Minnesota, the governor is opening everything up, I think, in like a week or something like that. The vaccine, I don't even care if the vaccine works or not, because perception is 9/10 the law, I've always said. And I don't care what it pertains to. And when it pertains to the vaccine, if the vaccine makes you safer or you think it makes you safer, you're going to go out and spend money and the economy is going to improve. And you're seeing some macro shifts along with that, secular shifts, i.e. younger people moving out of the city. The other thing is a lot of the millennials, you know, they're now getting 28, 30, 35. They're starting to get married and they're starting to have kids. So you're starting to see the wave of the economy expanding with new home sales. And then you've got furniture, right? We have a shortage of semiconductors for the auto industry. I had this, I'm going to completely go ADD on you. I had this 2017 Denali pickup, GMC pickup I had. I bought it in 2017 for $53,000, brand new. Now, it didn't have a lot of miles on it. I only had 22,000 miles on it, but I'm hearing about all the shortage of cars and everything going on. So I call my car guy and I'm like, because I don't really use it that much. I mean, it's all 4 years old. It's only got, you know, 22,000 miles on it. I'm like, what do you think I could sell this thing for? I sold it in 12 hours for $49,000. So $4,000 off of what I paid for it. Now, not including tax, but my point is there is a shortage. There are supply chain issues on many fronts. That is going to keep the economy going for a while, especially as more people come out. So the vaccine is huge, okay? All right, I mentioned alternatives, right? So alternatives to bonds. I've talked a long time about bonds being overvalued.
Yep.
Talked a lot about that we haven't owned bonds for a long time. We see better long-term performance out of dividend stocks. So alternatives to bonds will be vastly important in a search for yield and is in what is a double whammy for bonds. Persistent low interest rates, yet those that are slowly rising, number one, we would much rather own companies that not only pay a dividend, but with a healthy track record of growing that dividend over time. What people don't understand with bonds is you get your interest rate for a set period of time, whether it's 1, 3, 5, 10, 30 years. That interest rate is static. Why would I buy a 30-year bond at 3% today when inflation is technically 2% a year? I am going to lose buying power. People don't focus on buying power when it comes to investments. Dividend stocks, as you know, Matt, have the ability, they have pricing power. There's purchasing power, there's pricing power. Pricing power means as inflation goes up, I have the ability to increase the price of my product, therefore keeping my dividend consistent or even rising my dividend as my company grows. I'd much rather own a dividend stock than own a bond. People don't think about that. And remember, as interest rates rise, the value of a bond goes down until as you get closer and closer to maturity, that bond goes back to par. I've said this to my advisors for years. I think this is an important piece. If you're going to own bonds, the only reason, in my opinion, you are owning bonds is to reduce the volatility of your portfolio so you can sleep at night. That's the only reason. Okay. I mean, makes sense, right? Because they're quote unquote, when stocks usually go down, bonds go up or stay the same. But if you like volatility, and volatility creates opportunity, why wouldn't you rather own investments that have volatility and pay a dividend and go buy more of that stock when it goes on sale and still get your dividend? I mean, makes sense, doesn't it,
baby? It does. It just, you know, we've talked about bonds a bunch. In fact, we talked about it the last episode and in 4 or 5 before that. And I just am confused, Mark. I guess I don't understand why.
You don't usually get confused.
Well, I know, because I'm usually trying to get you, but I'm confused because that statement you just made about owning a company that's going to be able to provide you with a dividend and the opportunity to have growth in other ways just seems to me, I would sleep better at night if I knew that, then that I was going to get 3% over 30 years with a 2%, which, by the way, it's going to be higher than 2% inflation. We all know that.
Right.
And so pretty soon, if I had that 30-year bond, I'm losing money. I wouldn't sleep well with that, dude. I don't get that.
You just made the point that most people don't realize. People correlate losing money with seeing their principal value going down. That's not the only way you lose money. You lose money in purchasing power. If you get 3% straight across the board for the next 10 years, hey, that's great. You're getting the 3%. But if prices have risen 7%, 6%, 5%, 10%, guess what? Your 3% isn't going to help you. Yeah. So people have to start learning. You know, we've been in this 30 plus year bull market in bonds going from 20% down to basically zero. We've hit the bottom of the barrel. It's not going to be like that forever. And this is why we're so big on the idea of quote unquote invest with clarity, know what you own, why you own it, and use the ability of volatility, which Warren Buffett has said for freaking decades, to take advantage of buying stuff on sale. But if you own mutual funds and exchange traded funds, you don't know that. You don't even know what you own. That's why people say, well, I invest in the stock market. Do you invest in the stock market? Or what do you think the stock market's going to do this year? Who the frick cares?
Yeah.
If you invest in great businesses over time, that's the more important question to ask. So you're hitting it dead on.
All right. So that's VA. Now we're on to...
You're going to go to L, which is laggards.
Uh-oh.
Losers from 2020 turn into winners. Look at sectors such as energy, financials, materials to perform well in 2021. We own Devon, Citigroup, Discover, AIG. You know, we bought Devon probably in October. Now, look, I have to disclose. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Right? I got to give the disclosures. We hold a position as a company, so we have a conflict by mentioning this. But we started buying Devon at $11 a share, 11 and a half. And you know what that stock did to me? It went down to 9.
Did you hate when that happens?
Yeah, I really bought a ton more. Today it's trading at 25, 5 months later. That's powerful stuff. And I mentioned already Citigroup. I mentioned Discover, AIG. These are all names that have come up. But I think they still trade at discounts. And they're companies that you want to look at owning in the long-term performance of your portfolio. Laggards. Everyone likes to buy the stuff that's going up. Why? That doesn't even make sense. You want to buy the stuff that's going down if the long-term fundamentals have not changed or they've gotten better.
I have a question.
Lay it on me.
How do we find out what the long-term fundamentals look like, though?
You got to do your research.
Okay.
hire a management firm.
Well, of course we're going to hire you. I got you on that, my friend. But you know, there are people who listen to the podcast who are, you know, who try to be their own level of resourceful. And I mean, you don't mind it when people come to meetings somewhat prepared, but I don't know. I just, is that public knowledge?
Biggie, you're asking a complicated question.
You know, we can put a pin in this and come at it a different time if you want.
We've been doing this for 26 years. Right. I look at so many metrics all the time, macro, micro, cyclical, secular. I mean, it's no decision on any company we own is linear in nature.
Nice.
It's not linear. It is complicated. And there's a lot of moving parts, including where you plug that company into your allocation of your overall performance of your portfolio. Okay.
So in other words, Yahoo Finance isn't the only place that all of you listeners are going to be able to find out all of the information you need to know if the long-term performance of the company is solid.
No, there's, you know, you could go to Morningstar is a great research source. I like Motley Fool. We pay a fair amount of money for our research. I mean, we pay more money than individual investors. A lot of times we even have the ability to pay for research that they get. So we get a lot of quantitative and qualitative research. We get a lot of research on macro trends, cyclical trends, secular trends. You know, there's a lot of pieces that go into that. Valuations of businesses, you know, there's a lot that goes into that.
Okay. All right, so we're still on laggards here. Is there anything else that you want to?
Think laggards pretty much covered. I think next one, which is probably most people don't think about, which is really important. Of course, a lot of people are asking, you know, why do we not invest in Bitcoin or all of the other cryptocurrencies they are referred to? I'm not a pro or con to cryptocurrencies at all. But cryptocurrency is no different than the US dollar to the extent that it is a currency. Good or bad, right or wrong, I don't care what currency it is. Currency is currency. And there are lots of people that invest in currencies that they do it for a living, right? But what is Nepsis? Nepsis is a firm that believes in investing in great businesses over time, right? Currencies, whether it's the US dollar or cryptocurrency of any form, is not a business.
Not a business.
So there are ways to manage your portfolios. We owned a big position in Square for a long time, which of course had a big cryptocurrency position. But the US dollar is in the same frame. So let me explain. There are other pieces that, quite frankly, the cryptocurrency, make no mistake, is having an impact on the economy as well. To the extent that people are invested in making a lot of money in cryptocurrency, well, they're going to take some profits, right? And what are they going to do with their profits? They're probably going to go spend money, right? So there, you know, there is value to that as there is with the US dollar. So let's get more practical on the US dollar for a second. The US dollar, despite being maligned by most every pundit and has been for years, remains the quote, cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket, and is still the king of currencies. It is still the king of currencies with no worthy competitor. All that being said, the US dollar's current descent from generational highs creates an environment where a hedge is needed to preserve its purchasing power. So as the dollar goes down in value, you need more dollars to buy, right? So you got to have a hedge. International stocks, which are priced in foreign currencies, and businesses involved in selling commodities fit the bill for that. So Devon Energy as an example, Chinese stocks as an example, European stocks. A lot of people do own cryptocurrencies. It's less of a hedge probably at this point based on the meteoric rise they've had, but you get the point. The US dollar needs a hedge. You're going to get that from commodities, that you're going to get that including oil, steel, whatever it may be, and emerging market type stocks to help in that process because they're priced in different currencies.
Now, here's the thing about that, that I've heard from other people. So here's my, it drives me crazy when my kids say, well, Dad, people say, so I'm going to do that with you, Mark. So people say, right, that the commodities are the scariest thing to invest in. And I don't know if that's just because they remember the movie Trading Places, or if they remember, you know, anything else, you know, like it is classic, right? But so how do you, as a company that focuses on clarity and owning great businesses, are you saying that you're hedging here a little bit with these? I guess I'm not entirely clear.
For sure. So owning energy stocks, owning commodities, owning companies that benefit from those industries, industrials.
Okay.
That way. We had, boy, from the financial crisis coming out, we owned a lot of energy. We sold all our energy stocks in early 2015. Oil was probably 140. I don't remember even. Well, it was probably down to 75, 80 at that time. We had owned energy for a long time. We had owned aluminum. We had owned copper. We had owned steel. And we got out. Those were dead investments. The reason why people say commodities are the scariest thing to invest in is because commodities are probably more cyclical in nature than anything else. And you have to have a buy and sell discipline on commodities. And you have to think of them as cyclical in nature. And they can be great businesses, but they're going to be boom or bust. Yeah. They always are. Mm-hmm. And you have to be a professional if you're going to manage commodities. They can literally put you on your butt.
Yeah.
And currencies are the same way. There's a lot of people that own cryptocurrencies that have done great, but they don't frankly understand how the currency markets work, the flows of capital, inflow and outflow of capital. That's why you have to have a sell discipline along the way. And it doesn't matter if it's a currency, any currency, or if it's steel, copper, you know, gold, one of the biggest hedges that's used against the dollar in that process. Now, part of the reason why gold's not doing as well as, let's say, copper, steel, certainly lumber, a lot of people have heard about, oil, has a lot to do with, number one, the economy reopening, two, the macro shifts in people and how they want to live, and several other factors in that process.
Okay. We have one left?
Yes. I know we're going kind of long today.
That's all right, dude. You're covering a lot of ground here, and this is super awesome because there's some big shifts here that you're covering. So we want to make sure that we cover all of our bases. So hit us with the last, that would be on letter E, correct?
Oh, the last one is earnings. Earnings of a given respective business are what ultimately drive stock prices and not politics or other non-business events. Earnings per share on the S&P 500 is projected to be vastly higher at 178 for the calendar year ended 2021 from the 139 posted in 2020, or a growth rate of 28%. So when you think about that, the 178 for year end 2021 is projected to grow at a growth rate of 14% to 202 for the year end of 2022. If we get this type of EPS growth, Matt, equity prices should move in lockstep, all other things considered, meaning we continue to see that the economy is going to expand coming out of the pandemic. Value stocks will benefit tremendously from that. And you want to make sure that your allocation is not all growth stocks, frankly, not even all value stocks, but a great asset allocation of small, mid, large cap, international, emerging markets, US, and in categorization of growth and value to boot.
All right, brother.
There you have it.
That was fantastic. That was a lot of ground to cover. Please make sure that you hit the playback button and listen to most of this again, because it's really, really important for you to understand really, truly, and have the clarity that Mark and all of the team at Napsis want you to have. So, Mark, thanks for all your thought leadership today, my friend.
Appreciate it. Good seeing you.
All right, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time Mark comes out, the new podcast will show up directly on your listening device. But here's the most important thing, share this podcast. You know, a lot of people get really weird when you say, hey, you know, call my investment guy, because, you know, they get uncomfortable with that. It's way better. Have them listen to these podcasts, because when they do give Mark a call, they'll actually understand what investing with clarity truly means. Is that fair, Mark?
Fair statement, my friend.
All right. And make sure that you go to www.investwithclarity.com for all of your financial services needs. For Mark Pearson and everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.